To a storm of spoilers off season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and my favorite Dwayne, The Rock Johnson movie, is Michael Bay's Pain and Gain.
I'm Joanna Robinson, and my favorite Dwayne, The Rock Johnson movie is The Rundown, directed by, I couldn't tell you.
And I'm Neil Miller, and my favorite Rock the Dwayne Johnson movie is... his singing, dancing, well, animated dancing in Moana, because I found it to be his most charming effort to date.
Wow, Peter Berg directed The Rundown. Who knew? Not me.
Hell yeah, Peter Berg directed The Rundown. That's why it's shot like everything matters.
That's
a
so
lot.
Funny. That's really
it's
funny.
Great.
This week, we are, of course, debating The Rock, friend or foe. It's the cinema of The Rock, and probably a lot about his social media presence, maybe a little bit about his wrestling. I don't know exactly what we're going to bring up. We all have grand unified theories of what The Rock means in pop culture right now. It's going to be a throwdown. But first, you know, some business. This week, if you are a Maester level or above subscriber to our Patreon at patreon.com/stormofspoilers, you'll be getting a bonus segment about Mamma Mia. Here we go again. The three of us. Here we go. Yeah? Good.
Here we go again.
We go just again.
Just couldn't not do it.
Yeah. That title would definitely like be the victim of copyright infringement, but I would also love to argue that case in court. Be like, no, both letters are capital, Your Honor. We go again.
And like italicized and maybe bolded as well.
For sure. And they're in Comic Sans, just so it really pops out wherever it is. But before all that, Joanna, do we have any reviews?
We do. We have one from someone who has named themselves Regis the Monkey. And 5 stars. And the title is, The Rock is Cooking Toll House Cookies. thanks.
That promises a lot.
Thanks to the... tour. This has become my favorite podcast of the Joannaverse, and when the new season of Game of Thrones returns, I plan to fully embrace the storm for the first time. However, what I'm really here to say is that you will all be doing your fans a disservice if you do not at least give a passing mention in your Dwayne Johnson episode to The Rock's Hollywood debut as a 30-foot CGI scorpion centaur in the finale of 2002's The Mummy Return. This was a character and performance that made Kenneth Branagh's spider cyborg villain from Wild Wild West 2 years prior look appropriately Shakespearean. You guys know Wild Wild West, right, Dave and Neil?
Oh, yeah.
West? Jim,
what?
Jim,
yes.
Jim West? Dust Branagh? Okay. Any actor who has that as their first role and is able to not only salvage an acting career, but positively flourish, cannot possibly be considered the enemy. He has earned the power he wields. His story of redemption definitely proves that it is not falling down that matters, but instead, whether you manage to get back up. Hashtag get back up 2018. All right, well, that review had everything I could possibly hope for. Thank you very much, Regis the Monkey. Sidebar. My dear friend Eliza is moving out of the state at the end of the month, and we're throwing her a big going away party. And I asked her, like, we're big on themes in this house, and I asked her, like, sort of what theme she wanted for her party. And she's like, well, you could theme it after my favorite, like, bad movie. And I was like, what's that? She's like, Wild Wild West. I was like, oh, are we getting a cyborg spider? What are we doing? She's like, listen, you could like glue a watch face to a Halloween rubber spider and I would be happy. And I was like, oh, okay, that level of cyberpunk I can probably manage. So yeah.
Are you gonna have like leather water skins for all the men to make boobs of themselves?
Sure, obviously. Clearly. Someone has to wear a metal collar at some point.
Yes.
Yes. Just
all the time.
Did you do that on this podcast or in Fighting the War Room, Dave, when you casually dropped West Jim West Desperado? I think it was Fighting the War Room. I was just trying
That's just my life, I think.
I was just trying to call in response your casual Jim West Desperado.
I actually said it on this podcast, but I had turned down my volume to not laugh in case your review was funny.
Oh. Okay.
If someone says Wild Wild West, I say West, Jim West, Desperado.
No, you don't want Nado.
Wait, Will Smith...
supposed to turn our microphones down when we laugh?
Will Smith has the record for most like media properties that immediately start you rapping when you mention them.
Like Miami.
Fresh Prince, Miami...
Men in Black.
Yeah. It's just like I miss that part of a movie star where it's like, listen, this person is going to give you a single that talks about the movie and then star in your movie. That should be the more complete package.
Yeah, but Dwayne the Rock Johnson.
Yeah, yeah. That's why Neil likes Moana so much. He delivered on those things.
You're welcome.
Anyway,
all right.
That's right. Speaking of Neil. Hey. Neil, what's your segment this week?
Guys, I've watched a lot of cable news this week, and it feels like this week was 7 years long, so I feel as if we are having some sort of friendly reunion, and we need to go storm chasing, because I need to catch up with you guys. It feels, even though we literally recorded last week, feels like it's been a long time.
Storm chasing, pew, pew, pew.
Anyway, so as you know, Storm Chasing is the one movie, show, book, whatever's going on that we're chasing in the pop culture. Mine is another Netflix. What is it with Netflix cooking shows that there's so many of them, I think, is ultimately the question.
Here's the thing. You're in a loop because you're asking that in a segment where you're promoting another Netflix cooking show to all of our listeners.
That's true.
So that's exactly why. If you want more Netflix cooking shows, keep doing it.
Keep getting them Netflix. Anyway, my new one is Nailed It. This is a show in which normal people, like moms and stuff, and like dads, like people's parents, try to recreate famous and fancy ass cakes, and they give them the recipe, and the people who made the cakes are there, and they could kind of help them out a little bit, and it's always comes out terribly. And I think that is really funny, and the host is really great, and I'm forgetting her name right now, but she's great.
Nicole Byer.
Yes, yeah. She is hilarious. In the first episode, which I was very disappointed to find out, someone on Twitter spoiled for me that Sylvia Weinstock, who's a very famous wedding cake maker, I guess, she's only on the first episode. And I was ready for her to be on the whole season because she's amazing. She steals stuff. She's ornery, but she's delightful and super encouraging of these people who have no baking skills whatsoever. Like, it's like a show that they're like, we'll just get whoever to come try and bake these amazing things.
Wasn't it like a Tumblr or a Twitter account? Like this was like,
yeah,
based off the Cake Fails, I think, sort of Tumblr, that idea of like,
yeah,
people who try to like, yeah, follow a Pinterest thing and it turns out terrible.
Terrible. Yeah. So I'm just, yeah, what I'm saying is it's a rip-roaring good time and I would highly recommend it. And I love watching it. Also wanted to shout out a little Game of Thrones news, which really isn't Game of Thrones news. Apparently Natalie Dormer was doing an interview, and she said that she knows how Game of Thrones is going to end, I don't even care if that's true. Just good for Natalie Dormer. You're out there. You're doing your thing. You're getting
a text message from somebody and giving them like the Natalie Dormer eyes and being like, you could tell me though, right?
Right.
It's me, Natalie.
I'm not sure if Natalie Dormer knows how Game of Thrones ends, but I think it's probably a fascinating story about how she knows. But I don't know. It's Natalie Dormer knows the end and we don't. So there's that.
If she wants to know the end to anything else that we do know the end to, though, feel free to contact us.
Yeah, we can trade.
Stormspoilers@gmail.com.
I was re-listening to Dave's thing on Fighting the War Room that we're going to talk about later, and he was pretty much right on Infinity War. So if Natalie Dormer wants to trade information, we can make it happen.
Yeah, come on the show, Natalie Dormer. Just a casual invitation.
That'll totally work out. The Amazon show she's on, or whatever.
Yes. Or whatever.
Yeah.
Joanna, what's your storm this week?
I want to say that I think Natalie Dormer's lying, but I don't mind.
I think that's kind of how I feel about it too. Like, cool.
She's out there promoting. I know she's promoting a movie that she worked on, like that she wrote.
In Darkness.
Yeah, that she was trying to get made for like years before, even before Game of Thrones. So I know she's out there promoting that. I heard her on the Empire podcast. And so like homegirl knows how to get headlines and she got them today. So someone clicks through and they're like, oh, she's out there promoting what? Oh, this movie? Oh, okay. So, you know,
or maybe the secret ending of Game of Thrones is in that movie.
I mean, she should have said that too, frankly. She should have said, we've worked the ending of Game of Thrones into the movie. You're going to have to go see it multiple times in order to pick it up. But don't worry, it's definitely there. Okay.
It's a code.
We might actually be returning to this in terms of if PR actually is hurting things later on.
This worked out so well. Who knew that this would also give us our first Empire podcast shout out of the episode?
Yeah, that's right. Bingo up, everybody.
Above the line. They shout out Storm of Spoilers a couple weeks ago, I just want to say. So, you know.
Oh, no, they're awesome. They
rule. All right, so my storm chasing thing is the CBS All Access series, The Good Fight, which is like the spinoff of The Good Wife. The Good Wife is a show that I loved for like many, many seasons, and then it kind of unraveled at the end. But they spun it off. It's just finished its second season recently. And it's a show that I watched the first season of and then fell off on the second season. I didn't watch it. But then like some of our folks in the Patreon Slack were talking about it, and I was like, oh, yeah, I loved that show. And that's just sort of like something that happens with CBS All Access is like it just sort of like things feel hidden or whatever. Anyway, so I was like, oh, yeah, I still have a lot of season two to watch. So I got back into it and I was just like, the show is so good. You know, it's a spinoff that follows Christine Baranski's character Diane Lockhart as she at the beginning of season one like loses a lot of her money, joins this all African-American firm in Chicago, and it's like got a great cast including Delroy Lindo, Rose Leslie of Game of Thrones fame is on there, this actress named Kush Jumbo, who has like got the greatest name of all time, who was also on The Good Wife, is on there, Sarah Steele. It's great cast. They unfortunately in the first season they had Erica Tazel from Justified, who I loved on Justified, but that like Justified never knew exactly what to do with her. She played Rachel on Justified. Justified never knew exactly what to do with her. And hey, it turns out The Good Fight didn't know what to do with her either, because they replaced her in season two with Audra McDonald, and it was like a huge bummer for me. But someday some show will know what to do with Erica Tazel. But The Good Fight, your mileage may vary on season two, because like season one, the politics of The Good Wife and The Good Fighters like is unabashedly Democratic, unabashedly like moderate Democratic, establishment Democratic kind of. And they famously sort of filmed the first episode of the first season and they changed the ending because they assumed Hillary was going to win and she didn't. And they changed the ending to have Diane like watching Trump. And so Trump sort of, and they, you know, they don't have like a fake president, it's Trump that they talk about, and it hangs as like sort of a gentle specter all over season one. Season two is just hardcore Trump, and like the theme of season two is like the fatigue and sort of questioning your own sanity of like living a year under Trump. Like what living a year under Trump does to you. And Diane, who's a super liberal person, like keeps watching late night news and she's like, we'll watch something and it'll be a story like, you know, Trump took a pig to like blah, blah, blah. And then the next day she'll go to the office. She's like, did that actually happen? Like all this stuff happens and Diane's like never sure if this is a true story about Trump or like something that she made up because she's losing her mind. And so it's a very familiar feeling to me personally. So your mileage may vary on season two because it's very, very Trumpy. So if you're like trying to escape all Trump stuff, then maybe season two of Good Fight isn't for you, but tremendous performances. We love Rose Leslie, AKA Gret. She's fantastic. And I really recommend the show. So there you go.
Nice.
CBS All Access, drawing y'all in.
Well, you can also, I mean, like, you can watch season one, I think, on Amazon. You can, like, go watch on Amazon Prime right now. You don't have to do CBS All Access. So, there's that.
I need to get my CBS All Access turned back on at some point to catch up on that Star Trek show, too. So, maybe I'll get a little Good Fight season two. A little cathartic.
Into the apps.
Go through the app.
Go through
exactly. Oh, you could watch Killing Eve right now on the BBC America app, or you could wait till it comes on Hulu.
I don't know.
Apps.
I don't know.
App trap.
App traps. Okay. I one more thing that I want to say, one more storm that I'm chasing right now is I've like roped a lot of the Slack patrons into watching all the Mission Impossible movies with me because I felt like I wanted to watch them anyway, and a bunch of the people in the Slack were watching them on their own. And I was like, well, let's sort of coordinate these efforts and watch them all together. So we've gotten through one and two. We're watching 3, 4, 5. And then, you know, Dave and Neil and I will be discussing, spoiler alert, we will be discussing Mission Impossible next week. But I wanted to say that my favorite joke, and maybe I made it, so maybe it's not great to say this, but my favorite joke of the live watch of Mission Impossible 1 was like the part where the helicopter goes into the tunnel and I was like, go through the mountain. And it was like a little shout out to Lost in Space and to Dave. So there you go. All right. Yeah.
Nice. Always can't wait for Mission Impossible 3.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. We're doing that tomorrow. So if you want to join our Patreon and watch Mission Impossible 3 with us, we already watched the bad one. You can just watch good Mission Impossible movies with us now. So.
Yeah, it's all uphill from John Woo.
Yeah.
So 2 weeks ago, I was in New York for a wedding, and while there, visited some comic book shops, as I do, because I have a lot of memories of comic book shops in New York, which meant, unfortunately, I broke my Marvel boycott, because some of you might know, others of you might not know, Dan Slott just ended his run on Amazing Spider-Man. Dan Slott, who took over in November 2010, and has been ushering Spider-Man basically through all the good stuff that I liked until I had this sour on Marvel, but especially picking it up after the One More Day story arc, which is super bad and involves like the devil. It's not important. The important thing is that good Spider-Man was Dan Slott's Spider-Man, even if he did some things that I didn't necessarily like because he had to kowtow to what Marvel was doing as a whole. He gave me things like Superior Spider-Man, Big Time, a whole bunch of alternative costumes, as you know, I like. Your Spider-Gwens, your Silks, all these sorts of characters popped up during his run. And I think that it was really well plotted considering it was like 8-year run on one book. That came to an end 2 weeks ago with Spider-Man number 800. And then, so I bought issue number 800 and then issue number 801, I believe it was, which is actually Dan Slott's last issue. And kind of realized that I had missed a whole bunch of Spider-Man in the sense that the overarching plot that led into 800 was completely ridiculous. Carnage has fused with the Green Goblin who's back from the dead, and that wasn't so much important. Is that after 801, when they reset, it was a story about a guy who, like a decade or two ago, was going out to buy cigarettes and got saved from a robbery from Spider-Man, and how sort of Spider-Man, by saving all these like small individual people, allowed like this guy to have kids and have a full life. And he ends up tripping a mugger that is running away from Spider-Man all these years later. And Spider-Man's like, you know, thanks for helping me out. And the guy's like, no problem. You made me quit smoking. And it was just like an interesting little pin to turn what like a gigantic, dumb Spider-Man story back into like, oh yeah, this is what Spider-Man means to people. And then now Nick Spencer, the guy who turned Captain America into a Nazi, is taking over. So I'm going back to not reading Spider-Man. But I did quit to take a peek at the end of the era. And now I'm very tempted to kind of fill in my Dan Slott gap so I could be a completist. But not yet. Not yet. Just that little cheating with Spider-Man.
Right. I support you, my friend. We have to chase joy where we can. And, you know, 99% of the time, you are a staunchly moral person that interrogates power wherever you can. You've talked elsewhere about how exhausting this can be for you. So if you cheated a little to give yourself a little bit of Spider-Man enjoyment, then I support you in that.
I went and I bought, you know, the first issue of 801, and I bought a variant cover of 800 that has Mark Bagley, who is the guy who drew like My Spider-Man in the 90s and Ultimate Spider-Man. So I made sure that I went to a physical retail store and bought things that I could only buy there. I felt like that was, you know, mediating as much of the damage as I could.
Dave, I forgive you.
Thank you. All right. Good. Full absolution. Done. Don't at me. Yeah, that's storm chasing. Let's delve into something that won't be at all controversial. The Rock.
Rock, rock, rock.
Rock, rock, rock. That's a joke to playing rock, paper, scissors with only Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I guess I'll start, as I think I have the, at least the rock theory that you guys might have heard already if you've listened to the Fighting in the War Room episode. That includes The Rock. Is The Rock the enemy? But the core idea that got me thinking about whether or not we should talk about The Rock or talk about Skyscraper is sort of this greater idea that I think we could return to about what it means for a movie star or a public figure of a certain stature to dismiss legitimate criticisms in favor of populism and mob mentality. This would be something that I would only really apply to The Rock post Baywatch, which I think is the first
Rubicon.
Movie where
the Rubicon.
Yeah, what they would call the inflection
exactly.
point.
That was the movie that he eventually claimed after Baywatch was critically thrashed was a movie that was made not for the critics, but for the fans, which has since been his rallying cry around a lot of his movies, which have not necessarily done well critically. Some have done okay and others have bombed, but have had some positive reaction that he could latch onto. I think for Rampage and for Jumanji, he was a big promoter of the cinema score, which is, for those of you who don't know, it's a poll that you take after you've seen the movie that basically asks if your expectations were met. It's not so much a review of the quality of the movie, but if the trailer's like, hey, you're going to see a giant gorilla and a flying wolf and a lizard all fight in the city, and The Rock's going to be there, and that's what the movie delivers, then yeah, you're going to get an A-minus cinema score. Whereas The Rock would retweet the cinema score tweet announcing the A-minus and say, this is obviously evidence that he's, you know, delivering for the people. Whereas my argument back then, and it stays even more now that I think he's been picking some selective pull quotes from Skyscraper reviews to promote himself, is that I'm a big fan of The Rock's narrative as a star. And I'm a big fan of our reviewer, The Monkey, who claimed that we should be on The Rock's side because he's an underdog. He definitely is an underdog. He's someone who took his charisma and discipline with fitness and natural ability to be an entertainer and worked from the WWE in the mid-90s, I think it was like 96 his first fight was, up to where he is now, which is a person capable of splitting the Fast and Furious franchise because he doesn't get along with Vin Diesel, but he's also such a big draw to that franchise now that they might as well just split it off rather than lose his character entirely. And I think most dangerously, someone that in the past his fan base has asked him to get involved in politics, creating sort of a Arnold Schwarzenegger situation where it's like I'm concerned if he's a movie star telling people not to listen to critics. I'm super concerned if that person then gets into politics, because I feel like our current experience with making TV stars politicians basically works out poorly if you're left-minded. Even it's always worked out poorly, I think. But especially in terms of our current president, who was a reality TV star for a period of time, I don't think that this is the pool of people you should necessarily be pulling from. I think it's a great American bootstrapping story, but I would much rather him be in a position where he could just make tons of money and I could have opinions about his art than him start using his charisma that I don't think he's using responsibly in the lives of actual people. So that being said, post Baywatch, telling people that critics don't matter has been slowly escalating.
That's
go ahead.
I just want to like really drill down on what he has said, because like,
yes,
while I largely agree with you, I think it's important to clarify that like he's never said critics don't matter. You know, like maybe it's not useful for me to like parse it. He's implied that critics don't matter, but he's not said, it's not quite so Trumpian as to say like fake news or anything like that, right? He's just said like what the people are interested in matter to me. But what I will even more harshly accuse The Rock of, and we should say The Rock is an enormously, before anyone like turns this off in disgust, The Rock is an enormously appealing performer. I like him in a lot of movies. I enjoy what he does on screen in a lot of different things. And I enjoy like some of the extracurriculars he does outside of his movies. But like this war that he sort of started participating in between like the Rotten Tomatoes score, the Cinema score, the whatever. Yeah, I don't think it's useful. I don't think it's useful when anyone does it. And certainly not someone as like beloved as The Rock. And he like couches it somewhat in like positivity in a way that is like frustratingly slippery. My least favorite thing that he did, and once again, I like him in a lot of things, but my least favorite thing that he did was around Rampage, brag that Rampage had the highest Rotten Tomatoes score for any video game movie ever. Great news, The Rock. That score is 53%. That's a bad score. And so, like, you know, we've talked before about how we don't, like, necessarily think the Rotten Tomatoes score is, like, a great metric to measure anything. But, like, if The Rock is going to live and die by these various scores that he gets, which apparently he cares a lot about, it's like, yeah, it's disingenuous to go out there and be like, hey, guess what? Rampage, highest, like, you know, best, like, yeah, that's technically true, but it's disingenuous in the way that like some of the things that Trump says are disingenuous, you know? So like, I don't know.
Well, isn't that like also part of the tweets where he was like, and I was also in like that crappy Doom movie?
Yeah.
And it's like, you can't, like, that's even worse, because now it's not like The Rock just is constantly promoting The Rock. That's, The Rock can change his mind about what the people want The Rock to be and pretend he's always been that way.
He says, remember I starred in the stinker Doom, so I've lived thy curse, is what he said. He's like, it seems like we've finally broken the dreaded video game curse. Remember I starred in the stinker Doom, so I've lived thy curse. So, Rampage.
I remember Doom. I saw Doom. I enjoyed the stupidness of Doom. But he's the one that, like, was curling metal around his bicep and saying, Semper Fi, motherfucker. The Rock also was enjoying Doom. So it seems weird to, like, I get it, but it's the, if a celebrity's interaction with the fan base that they're interested in is supposed to be one that is built on being genuine, like I think The Rock is, those are the cracks that stand out to me the most, is when you're so genuine that you're using that as like a a buffer around these very small inconsistencies.
Yeah, similarly, and you know, this is all based on a conversation that you guys had on Fighting in the War Room, and you guys brought this up, which is, you talked about, this was months ago when Rampage came out, the fact that this started with Baywatch, as Neil called it, the inflection point, where like The Rock was like, I made this for the fans, not the critics. Like that is came from The Rock.
All those Baywatch fans,
yeah,
who were definitely like, you know who we want in this? The Rock and Zac Efron.
We made Baywatch for the fans, not the critics. But then he went and he accepted his Razzie Award for Baywatch later and was like, isn't it hilarious? This movie was so bad. And it's like, that's the disingenuous, that's what I'm saying. You're like trying to have your cake and eat it too. Like score points to the people who liked Baywatch, whoever they may be. Score a point with them being like, we made this for you, the people. Forget the snobby critics, we made it for you. And then when he goes to accept his Razzie, he's like, guys, isn't that thing a piece of shit? It's hilarious. I'm a good sport about it. It's great. I'm here. You know? And I just like, I can't reconcile those two things in a way that makes sense to me.
It's like a friend to everyone is no true friend to anyone.
Yeah,
right?
And the last thing I'll say is that this year especially, like, we're on our third Rock movie this year, right? It's Tumanji came out in like December, right? I guess.
Yeah.
Tumanji, December, Rampage, Skyscraper. And Ballers season 4, I think, is starting soon. Anyway, like, it's,
and he's not even part of the DC universe yet.
It's like, it's fine that he's like a busy dude, but like, these are diminishing returns. Like, be more selective in your stuff, The Rock, and I will enjoy you without question or hesitation. Because like, what The Rock does super, super well, I think, is like, is action comedy. And the stuff that he does, like Skyscraper, where there's like, the tone is not as doofy as it should be, then I'm just like bored. I'm like, yeah, you got a lot of muscles, but like, where's the charm? Because like, The Rock is funny. Like, be funny and muscly. That's what I prefer from you, which is why The Rundown is the best Rock movie. All right. Sorry. Neil, what are your thoughts on all of this?
Ooh, guys, I have so many thoughts.
Yeah, I'm ready.
On this. Well, okay. So I want to be fair to our friend Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Absolutely.
I do think that it's probably so. Okay. So every time this whole fans and critics thing comes up, it like forces me to have an existential crisis because I'm like, am I a critic? Am I a fan? Am I even here right now? Like, it's crazy because, I am both a person who writes criticism about film and a fan of some of The Rock's movies, most of them probably. So it's tough. It's a stupid argument for anyone to have. Like, it's dumb. Joanna's perfectly right, where she's like, it's kind of a dumb thing for anyone to do. I also don't like the anti-intellectualism that it sort of infers that, like,
yeah,
anybody who's like an expert is not to be believed. We should get over that and move on. Like, I'm sorry. There are people who are good at stuff and know stuff about stuff, or there are just people who are entertaining to read, and that doesn't make them like inherently liars.
Yeah, you don't have to agree with every critic, but like,
sure.
But like, critics by and large.
Oh my god, I disagreed with Roger Ebert on like 50% of things.
Right, but
critics, I loved reading him.
By and large, like, have spent more time thinking about movies than you because this is their job. They've maybe studied it, and like, yeah, the anti-intellectualism is Trumpian. It is.
I'm not here for it.
Yeah.
And you see it. We saw it before Donald Trump came about, and you see it in all kinds of different places. And I don't like it. I don't like it. Anyway, so, but in fairness to The Rock, I think it is very tough. You know, it's funny. Every time you go to a set and you talk to an actor who's making a movie, really all they know is sort of the general vibe and vision of what the movie's going to be. So there are situations I can see, especially when you're as busy as The Rock and you're not as like methodical with how you're choosing your things. You're just, he's out there hustling. He's out there getting the money because he came from the bottom. So I get that too. But what happens is you leave set, and then the filmmaker, who in a lot of cases is just some fucking dude, has to then make the movie. So by the time Baywatch actually comes out, it could be a totally sort of different movie than what The Rock had in mind, or it could just be bad and it's not necessarily his fault other than he chose to work with people who aren't that good at making movies. So I think you get into this situation where it's like, he can't go out there and be like, yeah, I get it. My movie's bad. Like, privately, he can do that. He can read reviews and say to himself, you know what, this was a mistake. And that's why maybe we see that come out later. But like publicly, when he's on a press tour and he's trying to hype this movie up, because The Rock, above all things, he's never been so much an entertainer as he's kind of a marketing experiment in the flesh. Like, it's always been about marketing. It's always been about branding. And that's where his success has sort of come from, you know, and like his most critical success was like Pain and Gain, which was him playing against his own type. So I think he gets into a situation where he has to double down. And that's where he gets himself into trouble, because when you're doubling down, you're making really bad arguments. And I think that, you know, obviously we're going to talk about Tom Cruise next week. I think this is the big difference between the two of them, because I think they both start from the same place. They start from a place where they should actually care more about the cinema score. Like, they should personally care that they're delighting the people who are coming to see their movies more than they should necessarily the Rotten Tomatoes score, because there's just so much other baggage tied to the Rotten Tomatoes score. Like, I think cinema score is actually not a bad thing for him to care about. But there are situations where it looks like he's reaching to that. Whereas you just never hear Tom Cruise talk about any of that. Tom Cruise goes out there, he's very selective. He, like The Rock, really wants you to like his movie. But I think the difference is, I don't think Tom Cruise cares if we like him. Because he's part, you know, he's like, I don't care if you like me personally. I don't care if you like any of the weird stuff that's happened to my marriages, my Scientology, whatever. All I care about is that when you leave a Mission Impossible movie, you had a great time. That's it. The Rock seems to want us to also like him, or he wants people to like follow along, probably because he has all these other aspirations, maybe. But I think he's always been like just a marketing exercise. It's like if Michael Bay engineered a person.
Well, yeah, I kind of want to unite what both of you said, right? Because I agree so strongly with both of you in that, like, you're right. The Rock is like a marketing experiment, but like a self promotion experiment too. You know,
yeah.
It's like when you start, you start in the world of wrestling, and you're like, I mean, I don't know if his like various catchphrases are written for him, probably, but like, do you smell what The Rock is cooking? And the People's Champion are like two things that I know about The Rock, and I never watched wrestling.
Right.
That's effective branding, right?
He's very good at branding.
And that's self-branding and self-hype, right? But what Dave has said here and on Fighting the Worm is like, you can start as the People's Champion, but like, now The Rock has grown. You can't remain the People's Champion. The Rock has grown out of that. He's a mega rich billionaire. Like, you're not the People's Champion anymore, right? And so to like pattern yourself as a populist when you're at the top of the heap like he is, that's where you get like a lot of clashes, I think. Like,
right.
Trump was, you know, I hate talking about Trump always, but like, Trump was disingenuous to ever call himself a populist, because he was born on, is it the third base, second base? I don't know. Whatever the base was, he was born on it. Okay. I don't do sport. Third base. You know, so like, for him to ever call himself of the people is ridiculous. I believe The Rock could claim that at the beginning of his career, of the people, and can no longer really claim that. So to call himself of the people now strikes me as just like a false note. And you're right that like someone like Tom Cruise, like, he knows that he's basically like an alien compared to the rest of us. He's so famous. And he's like,
can you imagine,
cool.
Like, I can't imagine Tom Cruise like hangs out with people.
Can you imagine Tom Cruise writing a tweet?
Yeah, no. Exactly. but here, you know what? It's funny that my mind went to this place, probably because the day we're recording this is the 10-year anniversary of the release of The Dark Knight. It's been all over film Twitter. Yeah. But it's that old adage that Handsome McHandsome Face says. He's like, you either die the hero, you live long enough to become the villain. There is a limited lifespan to being the underdog. And I think that is actually a thing that a lot of very famous people go through and struggle with. LeBron James, a person that I admire, struggled with that in his, you know, when he went to Miami. We're seeing that with Trump, where it's like, being the underdog campaigner, crazy guy, maverick, sharpshooter guy during the campaign is not working for him as like the person who's supposed to be in charge of stuff. You know, you do at a certain point, you're no longer the underdog and you have to reckon with that in a way. You know, some people reckon with it well and some don't.
I was thinking about this when I got a bunch of promotional material. I guess I'm just on like fucking movie studio promotional material now, which is, did not used to be the case because I'm not a film critic. But like I got a box of promotional nonsense for the Amy Schumer movie, I Feel Pretty. And I was looking at that and I was like remembering all the shit that Amy Schumer got around I Feel Pretty, which is, you know, a film that I didn't see, a film that was reportedly bad. I watched the one she made right before that with Goldie Hawn on a plane. I was like, yeah, this is not a good movie, but like it was fine for a plane. You know what I mean? But that's like, that's mm-hmm. going on with Amy Schumer. But when Amy Schumer made Trainwreck, or when Amy Schumer started Inside Amy Schumer, she was like underdog. She was like, hey, guess what? You don't see my body type a lot. Hey, guess what? Blah, blah, blah. And you're like, yeah. And then she became best friends with Jennifer Lawrence. And you're like, I don't know that I can like follow you on this, like on this path anymore. Or similarly,
you're not punk rock anymore.
Yeah. Or similarly, Jennifer Lawrence, who's like, isn't it hilarious? I just like fall down all the time. And now I'm like, girl, you've got like multiple Oscars and more money in the world. Like,
you could afford to pay someone to hold you up.
Yeah, I can't follow you on that anymore. And so like some people transition into that more gracefully where they're like, yep, now I'm Kate Blanchett and I'm from another planet and you can't touch me. That's just true of me.
Right.
You know what I mean? And some people like it's just harder. Dave, I feel like I'm talking too much and not letting you
speak. I have one more thing to point out. Doom, the 2005 film Doom, did get a B- cinema score, which is pretty bad for a cinema score. So so I guess
I was one of the few. Well, the key to enjoying Doom is they put the first person sequence towards the end of the movie.
So listen, if The Rock really just cares about the cinema score and making his fans happy, he's right to be a little ashamed about Doom.
Fair. I mean, so we didn't used to have this type of movie star because there used to be a barrier between the public and the movie star.
There used to be not Twitter.
Yeah, it'd be filled by the critics, the people that are now apparently useless because that barrier's down. But that's like a weird false narrative because that's what allows like a Tom Cruise and The Rock to seem like two separate entities when really it's just like Neil saying one's doing it better than the other. I completely agree with Neil's comparison because I think the only way The Rock can fix himself is by pivoting to entirely what it's all about, what he's doing.
So right. It's all about making the best movie possible. I don't believe that The Rock is doing that right now because there have been some movies where it's like, I liked like, well, we'll talk about Skyscraper, where it's like, I liked like a third of that. Whereas like, yeah, I know even Mission Impossible, 110% well, of like, that movie is going to be good.
Even if he doesn't, even if he doesn't like the reaction to the movie, I would be okay with him being like, no, but Skyscraper is really important to me for this reason. And I'd be like, that's much better than the people who don't sure. like it are wrong.
Like, there's a really good narrative in Skyscraper about like it being about a guy who's dealing with a disability. And a lot of people are happy with that. Like, that's something to be celebrated. You don't have to like be like, critics are stupid.
Well, it's so funny because like I had seen, well, that's a thing. Okay, it depends who you follow, because like I had seen The Rock retweet of like someone who I like and follow. We mutually follow each other on Twitter. Kristen Lopez wrote this great piece and slash film about like how she responded. And I know one of our listeners and our patron Slack, who is also like Kristen is a disabled writer. This woman on our Slack also felt like she saw something in Skyscraper that she really related to and she really liked. But it's so funny because when I asked my friend if she wanted to see Skyscraper with me today, she's like, I love that I Googled this and the first thing that came up is like The Rock under fire by like paraplegic vet for doing, you know. And so it's like, so it's I had just seen The Rock retweeting positive stuff and I was like, oh, Skyscraper is a film that has been appreciated by the disabled community. And then it's like, no, duh, Joanna, like you can't paint any community with one like with one brush, right? You know? And so like, yeah, there are people who don't like this portrayal of you know, like his character has, you know, the a prosthetic leg on the bottom,
but at least that's something so like, where he can say we had the best of intentions for this, we tried it. It may not work for everybody, but it was important for me to try.
Has he said that, though?
If he said that, that's what I'm saying. That's like, if he came out and said that, that's something worth celebrating. The, you know, proving critics wrong is sort of a dumb argument to have altogether.
Yeah. I mean, I like what you said, Neil. It's like, you know, the way movie making works, he doesn't have that much control over if it's like a good movie or not.
Sort of.
And I completely agree with that. But I need him to also scale down his participation to that amount. I'm all for, you know, Tom Cruise risking his life for a stunt, and then we get to talk about that for 8 months about, you know, how Tom Cruise almost injured himself, and then not necessarily having to tweak the narrative.
Yeah, but Tom Cruise isn't talking about it, and that's a different thing. Tom Cruise isn't on Instagram being like, all right, guys, about to get on the wing of the plane. Oh, my God, here we go. And so, like, and that's the thing is, like, maybe I shouldn't begrudge The Rock that, like, connection with his audience, which obviously is, like, something that he learned in the wrestling ring, I think, but then also something that maybe he genuinely gets joy out of. But it's like, I think what you're saying, Dave, I think I'm agreeing with you when you're saying, like, you need less of The Rock, like, standing up on the ropes at the edge of the wrestling ring and screaming about what he's going to do, and more of him just wrestling good in the ring. You know what I mean?
Well,
and like,
the more, not even wrestling good, but just like, keep your focus in the ring. Like,
right, make the product good.
You've already done all the yelling. Everybody's looking at you.
Yeah.
What are you going to do now? And so far, the answer has been Rampage and Skyscraper.
Right, which are not good movies. Like, that's the thing is, like, if they were just good movies, then, like, maybe, yeah, I don't know. Because, like...
And so now, in other words, he's signed up to play Black Adam in the DCEU. This has happened so long ago. There's no fucking way they've had a Black Adam movie in pre-production this whole time. This is the movie that is anchored because eventually we could bring in The Rock to save this. We're going to use this character. But The Rock can't stop fucking talking about it either. It's like, it doesn't exist, but he wants all the credit for it being out and being the best thing in the DCU universe. He's like, I'm stronger than Superman. I'm going to be like this thing. We're not going to have any of the Man of Steel problems. It's like that sort of pre-hype. And I don't like any of the hype anymore. I don't like the pre-hype. I don't like the post-hype. If he just shows up to play, I can't begrudge him because he's, you know, just holding on to his rung at the ladder. I don't need the aspiration, the hard sell anymore from Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
I mean, we should, like, this is the thing is, I guess that idea of being like your own best hype man is like kind of working because we think of The Rock as this like enormously successful figure, and he is, but at the same time, like, he's been on an HBO show that nobody talks about for like 4 seasons. That's not like a success. I mean, like, plenty of people watch it. I know people watch Ballers.
Like, but him making an HBO show was not the same as Nicole Kidman's going to be in an HBO show.
Right. And then, like, he's like, not...
It wasn't, like, a big deal.
I would say that, you know, like, starting just since 2005. So, just since 2005. I think the world would be a fine place without San Andreas... Central Intelligence, Baywatch, Rampage and Skyscraper. And
I only agree with one of those. I think Baywatch was totally unnecessary.
I guess it's Central Intelligence.
You're
going
to go to bat for Central Intelligence?
Yeah, I like Kevin Hart.
I like Kevin Hart in other things, not in Central Intelligence.
It seems weird that he has to promote himself with the frequency and pitch of a YouTube star when he's The Rock.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I think, you know, where my mind goes with all of this, like as an end-ish game, is this notion that my hope is that we are experiencing peak The Rock right now. Like, my hope is that this is where it sort of, you know, all comes to a head. He is the busiest and most popular person of 2018, whatever. My sincere hope for him is that he sort of leaves this whole political thing behind, And just sort of calms down a little bit and has a good and like a good like final act to his action movie career, where it's like he chooses a bunch of really good projects and sort of chills out a little bit. You know,
he could do like a whole third act before that where he tries drama and he doesn't necessarily do super well with it, but he does well enough.
Sure.
Because drama movies just perform in like enough of a pitch that if you put The Rock in it, enough people are going to show up to see what happens to make it successful.
Yeah, I hope that he, you know, deals with the success of some of these movies and the failure of some of these movies in the right way. But the more we talk about it, the more worried I am that this is going to go badly because we live in the darkest timeline. So there's that.
Well, if California splits into a conservative state and a not conservative state, I wonder where The Rock ends up.
Along some kind of
it'll be the governor
San Andreas
of the conservative
fault
line. The Rock.
You mean the Dwayne The Rock Johnson Memorial Fault Line?
Yeah,
fault line?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Listen, I'm all for that being the plot of San Andreas 2. I am not for that being the plot of a real world thing. I think that's where we need to draw the line.
Oh, well, speaking of the Rock movies that we may or may not have to draw the line on, let's transition into some Skyscraper and see if any of our hypotheses apply.
Riddle me this, Neil Miller. Wait, Dave, did you see Skyscraper?
I did not.
Okay, great. Okay.
Awesome.
Riddle me this, Neil Miller. Would this have been a better movie if Neve Campbell had been the lead performer?
See, I think that's where we experienced a different movie.
Okay.
Because I watched this movie and I know that Neve Campbell was the lead in this movie.
Okay.
The Rock is this is two movies.
Yeah.
This is first a movie about Neve Campbell playing a badass Navy surgeon who saves her family and is awesome. Figures the whole thing out. It's part of my favorite genre alongside Geostorm, where the ultimate solution is turning something off and turning it back on again. I think we should be in favor of that. People learning that that's important. And the other part of this movie is The Rock starring in the first biopic about the Minnesota Public Radio raccoon. Because that's what he does for the whole movie.
That's a great joke.
He just climbs a building. So I think I love Neve Campbell in this movie. And
I
agree with you. I think when I described this movie to you earlier, it kind of rules, but it's mostly bad. The part that kind of rules is Neve Campbell stuff, some of the stunts that made me a little queasy, and the fact that it's a secret backdoor sequel to The Dark Knight, because it's of that guy who plays the money laundering guy. The guy who plays like the billionaire in this movie is also the money guy in The Dark Knight. Anyway.
Oh, okay.
And he runs off to Hong Kong and Batman has to go get him. So anyway.
Yeah.
Also,
Chin Han.
He built a taller building.
Yeah.
One that Batman couldn't
stand on top of.
Jump into.
Yeah, he plays
also,
Zhao, Chin Han. Go ahead. Yeah.
I also really liked and would love to see more of the story behind China's Timothy Oliphant, who played the police guy.
I loved him. Byron Mann.
He was basically the Reginald Vell Johnson of this movie.
No, not basically.
He is. 100%.
No, like, okay, here's the deal. He is and he isn't. This is why Skyscraper is so annoying. He never, ever, ever talks to The Rock's character, whose name is Will Sawyer. But
right.
He's definitely the Reginald Vell Johnson character. He's down on the ground. But when the movie ends, and spoiler alert, The Rock gets off the building and is fine, he goes up to him and goes...
He does the diehard thing.
He does the literally the diehard line. He goes, "We finally meet." And I'm like, you've never talked this whole movie. Not once
right.
did you have a conversation. So you don't get to do the Reginald Vell Johnson line, the exact same line from Die Hard, because you never talked to him. You have a relationship with his wife, who is the real star of this movie. You don't have a relationship with him. But that guy rules generally.
Iron Man,
big fan. He's on The Expanse, so maybe I'll watch that show.
I know. He's very much, when I first saw him on screen, I was like, oh my God, that guy looks kind of like Timothy Oliphant. I don't know why.
I can see it.
He's got the swagger. I also want to see more about the crime syndicate run by China's Ruby Rose. Who was also in this movie.
My friend called her Haircut Fembot, which I really liked.
Nice.
So haircut.
So there's fun, weird shit in this movie that someone snuck in to an otherwise stupid movie.
It doesn't cohere. Like, let's talk about Swedish hacker. I think Swedish. Whoever he is, who's literally...
Oh, no. German Simon Pegg?
Sure. German Simon Pegg, who has a deeply interesting jacket, a really inscrutable accent. He's such a super interesting... Right off the bat, you're like, who's this guy? Dead within 5 seconds. Why? Why make him so interesting then kill him? And then also, we need to talk about Noah Taylor and Pablo Schreiber giving the hardest core...
Oh my God, I forgot Pablo Schreiber was in this movie.
I know. Pablo Schreiber dies in like 15 minutes. But like, Pablo Schreiber and Noah Taylor giving like the most hardcore telegraphed, actually were evil though, shifty eyes in their intro when you're like not supposed to know they're evil yet. I'm like, yeah, stop shifting your eyes around and then maybe I won't know that you're evil. Couple other things that I thought about. Love Neve Campbell in this, obviously. Was mixed okay on the boots she was wearing because she didn't know she was gonna have to like get her kids out of
right. She was just taking her kids to see pandas.
They were just gonna see pandas. She's wearing a nice heeled boot. Then they make her walk a beam with a child on her back as a raging inferno goes below in heels, and I was like,
And she kills it.
Well, this is where we mentioned that Neve Campbell studied ballet. Disrespect Neve Campbell to your cost. So yeah. They also did that thing, you know, the thing that I hate where like only women can fight other women. When Fembot Haircut showed up, I was like, ooh, Neve Campbell will be punching her later. And she did.
Yep, sure enough.
I was like, The Rock will
but
not
she
be
she did do it in
her.
Kind of a fun way. I would also like to say that I appreciated the age appropriateness of the two leads in this movie, because The Rock and Neve Campbell are actually really close to the same age and they look like two people who would be married and maybe have some 10-year-old kids. So shouts to not casting a 20-year-old, which is actually a problem Tom Cruise has.
Yeah, and that's not a problem he has, because he also had Carla Gugino in San Andreas and she's also age appropriate.
Right. So The Rock,
sure.
Secret feminist.
Yes. Secret feminist for sure. Like that stupid pandering line where the little girl's like, I'm not a princess, I'm a king. I'm like, all right, we get it.
I could be whatever I want.
Also,
this is movies. It's very able.
Oh, yeah.
Pro-able.
I feel like,
wait. I want to say
not ableist.
One more thing that I find outrageously stupid in terms of putting whoever put this plot together. Nope. Two more things. Number one, okay, we're going to have a family trapped in the world's tallest building, impossibly tall, fire everywhere. It's going to be really harrowing, blah, blah, blah. We need to make it a little harder. Cool. Let's give the kid asthma. Great. Asthma. Great. Love it. Also, we need to talk about the bad guy in this movie. Someone I've never... I mean, he's an Atomic Blonde, but like
he was... One of the guys who got beat up by Charlize Theron in Atomic Blonde.
Yeah, all of Germany got beat up by Charlize Theron in Atomic Blonde. But he's like literally no one I've ever seen. And that's like not the end of the world, except for the fact that like he never makes an impression. And so when it comes to like the dramatic showdown in the projection hall of mirrors, which is exactly where we know the dramatic showdown is going to happen when they introduce it at the beginning, ditto the turbines, ditto everything that they introduce, ditto turn it off, turn it back on again, honey, at the beginning of the movie. You're like, cool, that's how she solves it at the end. Like all of that stuff that they
wait, is this a dumb daylight?
Yeah, kind of.
Oh, you know what, I would have actually bought this pitch if I was The Rock, so
but
I've recontextualized it all now.
But like, who is this villain that is worthy of sparring with The Rock? Like, what are you can't do Die Hard without Alan Rickman, right? Like, what is
they got the idea is right. Like, European guy, just generically European dude, is the right answer for the bad guy. But you're right. If you can't be Die Hard without a compelling person like Alan Rickman playing the generic European bad guy,
or even
what is he after?
A thumb drive or some shit.
He's after a flash drive.
It's money laundering. Actually, you know what? It's funny. In the moment when they were explaining what the fuck was going on in the movie, because that's what it had came to, I was like, oh, that's actually like relatively clever. That would be clever in like a very thoughtful spy thriller made like, you know, to be released in like August to be an adult drama. But it's complete so stupid in this movie. They have to stop and like halt the movie for 20 minutes to explain what the fuck's going on.
Everything while Zhao
and the Rock is over there just like, can I duct tape it? What can I do?
Yeah, we're like, our billionaire is like, hey, these thugs were extorting me so that I reverse engineered their money tracking thing, and now I have the name of all of their like clients and people associated with them, and that's bad, and I keep it in a safe, so they want it, so, but I've sent copies to the authority, but if I die then he can undo everything. And I'm just like, what are you talking about? Why did the movie stop right now when 40% of this building's on fire?
Right, and the plan, like the evil plan, is like, it's evil, it's also like, it sounds like the bad guy is supposedly like under pressure by like these three like gangs, these you know, three mob families,
yeah.
And so, but it also is like very petty. Like the bad guy at one point's like, not only do I want to steal the information you have, but I want to like make you watch your building burn down. Like, yeah. So it
sounds like the motivation should have been just like, I want to be the highest.
I thought it was going to be an insurance scam or something.
Well, yeah, because the insurance guy is bad too.
Because he's Noah Taylor. And like,
maybe it was also an insurance scam. Like, maybe they were going to then use the insurance to get money. I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's so stupid.
I wish this movie had been Pablo Schreiber. Nev Campbell fights Pablo Schreiber. That's what this movie should have been.
For sure.
While a building burns. Yes.
I mean,
it sounds like it should have been like a third of the script from Die Hard, a third of the script from Daylight, and then remaining parts of Snowpiercer vertically.
And Tower Inferno, yeah.
Towering Inferno. Okay, so Snowpiercer, Towering Inferno.
Here's the thing, though. I have a problem with heights. Like,
me too. The way that Dave feels about underwater monsters, I feel about heights.
Yeah, and I actually, it manifests when watching movies. Like that Joe Gordon-Levitt, when he did the movie Man on Wire remake. I saw that, and I thought I was going to throw up in the theater. This movie only had like one or two scenes where I was like, I expected it to be more of that, because as we've sort of is the running theme of this episode, it kind of is about expectations. My expectations were, this is going to be very uncomfortable. The Rock's going to do some cool shit and maybe some weird stuff will happen. And I got most of that. It was just maybe like 20, 30 minutes too much movie.
See, that just sounds like a low bar that wasn't cleared.
I mean, that's also true. It's funny because I enjoyed parts of this movie, but also when I walked out, I was like, yeah, I get it. I'm like, it's not great.
Oh, the skyscraper was the building.
Yeah. Like,
damn.
Like, I get it. There's some fun stuff, but it's not good.
The, the part where he makes the jump, which is in the poster, I had to like look away for some of that.
Yeah. See, for me, it wasn't even the jump so much as it was him climbing the thing before the jump, where he's like hanging off of this crane. And I'm just like, this is where people die. Like, I know he doesn't die, but this is how people die.
Like, and there's a part, there's so like the at the top of the skyscraper is this pearl that like, due to, I don't know, camera hologram technology.
It works like the underneath part of Samuel L. Jackson's helicarrier, I think.
Okay. In that he can flip a button, the billionaire can flip a button, and then all of a sudden, like, you can't tell that there are walls anymore, and you just feel like you're floating above the earth. And he was like,
oh, yeah. I want to install that in my tallest building.
And he's
ever.
Like, welcome to heaven, right? Is what he says. Which is then undercut by Pablo Schreiber, which is good because Pablo Schreiber is good in this movie and should not have been killed in like 10 minutes in. But like, so the Rock is sort of like hovering over the earth in this thing, right? It's a bad effect, like, because it doesn't look impressive. Nonetheless, if a billionaire did that to me, I would immediately vomit on his like $1 billion mirror hologram thing, because like, if he made me feel like I was floating that, you know, a mile or whatever above the earth.
Yeah, I would have barfed.
I just would have barfed on him and on his technical achievement as well.
I mean, maybe it wasn't that impressive to The Rock, and he was like, this is so fake, I can't even.
All right, so, in conclusion, clips I have to YouTube in 8 months. Final battle in the air.
No. What? That's not good, okay, right? Neil?
The final battle is kind of lame.
It's lame.
I would say the sequence where he finds his family is pretty good. And like they're in the fire bridge scene. Yeah. Yeah. And he puts his wife and son in the elevator. That I thought was interesting. Like you never see them split up people like that in big action movies. Usually it would be like he takes them and he's like, all right, let's hide you somewhere. But he just like straight up saves his wife and his son is like, I'll go get the daughter later, which I thought was a really interesting choice.
You know why? Because asthma.
Because asthma, I guess.
Had to get out of the building.
That is one thing about The Rock's characters for the most part is they make good decisions, and that's usually how they win.
Asthma, yeah. So the fire bridge sequence, the jump, I guess.
The jump is coolish.
And then I would say, I don't think you would even do the turbine thing because I just didn't think that was that interesting.
Although that made me more uncomfortable because he was like walking. It, usually for me, it's like when people are slowly moving around very high places, I'm like, don't go slow, go fast. Like,
but it's so funny because like, so there's this crowd at the bottom, as you might expect, there's this crowd at the bottom of the skyscraper and they like, and he's being, all of everything he's doing is being projected on this big like screen and they're all like cheering him on. And I'm like, I know what this is supposed to feel like. It's supposed to feel like The Martian, where I actually like cried when like crowds of people were cheering like the rescue of this astronaut played by Matt Damon in The Martian. I was like, I don't feel any of this for Dwayne The Rock Johnson on here. So I would say the jump, the fire bridge, and then like something that Neve Campbell does with the cops, because I just liked that cop so much and I like Neve Campbell so much. So like maybe the part where she reveals she can speak Chinese and they're like, oh shit, maybe we should speak like, Chinese around her.
I mean, the last like 20 minutes of the movie is fine. The action sequence isn't great, but Neve Campbell interacting with the cops and like figuring out the technology stuff and like kicking homegirl Fembot in the face is pretty great. So maybe the end, just when it goes to Netflix, just watch it. The whole thing. It's fine.
Don't watch the whole thing. But then here's...
just drag along until I see something that looks interesting.
Here's the last thing that you should YouTube. The part where The Rock goes, hey, billionaire, what are you going to do next? The billionaire goes, rebuild. And I go, Skyscraper 2. Great. Hopefully this time starring Neve Campbell. Neve Campbell's Skyscraper 2.
Neve Campbell's Skyscraper 2.
It can be like, didn't they do a Taken?
Speed 2.
Oh, no, in Taken, it's like the first one, his daughter gets kidnapped, then his wife gets kidnapped. Isn't there one where he gets kidnapped? Like, let's do Skyscraper where The Rock gets kidnapped.
Has asthma.
And Neve Campbell has to jump off of a building.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Or like somebody steals his leg and she has to go get it. Nope. Yeah. Okay.
This is why The Rock doesn't like critics.
Because we're bad at coming up with this and next
movie.
Like,
first of all, this is the better version of this movie. Second of all, here's the sequences you have to steal sometime in the future. Third of all, here's what your next bad movie should be.
You should Google image search Neve Campbell ballet because she does really impressive stuff with her leg over her head and she's great. So.
Yeah. Shouts to Neve Campbell. I feel like I haven't seen her in a long time. Yeah. And
so that's what she brought the fire. Java said. She's like, where's Neve Campbell been? And I'm like, I saw Neve Campbell at like the Old Vic in the middle of like a years-long run, like at some point in London. I think she's just been working on better things than gigantic movies. So I'm glad that she realized that she was the backdoor protagonist to this, and more so glad that she got another paycheck. A rock-sized paycheck, I hope.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, probably not.
Damn it.
Here's something I can guarantee you. Neve Campbell made at least half of what The Rock made, if not less. So
that's what The Rock should be tweeting about then.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Rock should be donating his salary to Neve Campbell. Is that how that works?
I think that's how it works. So Joanna did sort of spoil it, but Neil, what are we up to next week on Storm Spoilers?
Oh, Dave, we're going to put on some sunglasses, and they're going to be a secret heads-up display, and the text, in a very 90s
font, we're going to Ready Player One again.
We'll say, no. Your mission, if you choose to accept it, is still to Ready watch all of the Mission Impossible movies that are currently available. Which is all of them except for the one that's coming out next week, which we'll also be reviewing next week. So that will be cool.
Bump, 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 bump.
We're talking about Tom Cruise. We're going to be like Tom Cruise, friend or foe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's going to be a little bit of that. Because
no, but see, here's the thing. We can... what Tom Cruise does, the way he conducts his life, it makes it easy to ignore everything but the movies.
That's true.
Yes, like easy, but not responsible.
Not responsible, but a whole lot easier than The Rock makes it. The Rock makes it real hard.
Here's the thing. Mission Impossible 1, I absolutely love it. Because it was like a cool adaptation that were like, you know, took its audience seriously, but was also an action movie. Tom Cruise doesn't fire his gun. He just has his gun. He like gadgets and spycrafts his way out of things. Super great. Two's really bad. Three, very enjoyable. Four, absolutely amazing. I'm going to see five for the first time for next week's episode.
Yeah, Rogue Nation!
And I hear great things about it.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise is a garbage person.
Yes, all true. All of those things are true.
So, because, you know, it's not, he's not in politics, he's not elected, I'm going to do my part to support good action movies and weigh in on some Missions Impossible, but there will be occasional mentions that I don't like Tom Cruise, because I feel like we should also bring that up.
That's
of
fair.
Of course we should. Of course we should. I agree.
So we're going to do that next week.
Yeah. Good. That's a lot of movies for people to watch, but luckily a lot of them fly by, unlike two, which does not.
Well, I mean,
by.
Like, you can just tune in and listen to us talk about the most recent one if you want to or whatever. But anyway, like, if you want to pick and choose, if you don't watch all the Mission Impossible movies, I would say you could, if you wanted to, start at Ghost Protocol and watch Ghost Protocol, which is number 4, and Rogue Nation, which is number 5. Those are two incredibly great movies, and then Fallout, which is in theaters. Like, you could do that. You don't have to do MI 1, 2, 3 if you don't want to. Like I said, we're doing that over on the Storm of Spoilers Patreon Slack, but that's because we decided to be completists, and it's really fun to do together. But like, I don't want anyone to sit at home and be like, I have to marathon 5 movies. Are you kidding me?
Right.
So,
yeah. Or if you just want to do Fallout, we will be talking about the ones that you haven't seen. And apparently, Fallout has some minor references to previous things, so you'll be able to catch it having listened to our podcast. Service provided.
Yay.
Mission accepted.
Oh.
Until then, guys, where could people find more of our work on the internet? Let's start with Neil Miller.
You can get me over at filmschoolrejects.com. That's a website that I write for. You can catch my theory columns, which may involve The Rock this week, on our Patreon, patreon.com/stormofspoilers. You can also follow me on Twitter at rejects. Not necessarily recommended, but, you know, your mileage may vary. Also, make sure that you follow the show at Storm of Spoilers and send us your Tom Cruise Mission Impossible related email thoughts to stormofspoilers@gmail.com.
And Joanna Robinson.
You can find me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. I am doing a podcast about the HBO series Sharp Objects called Still Watching : Sharp Objects, which you can listen to on the Still Watching feed. Or you can find me, I will be on an upcoming episode of Buffering talking about one of the saddest things that happens in Buffy Vampire Slayer history.
There's a lot of sad things in Buffy. Like, sad in the show or sad for the show?
Both. Love those.
Oh, damn. All right. Gonna have to tune in and find out, I guess. I'm Dave Gonzalez. You could follow me on Twitter at DA7E. I usually say don't, but you know what? It's Comic-Con this weekend, and I am only going to have tweet things to say about it.
It'll be Dave's Expertise Week magnified.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Good old screen capping YouTube trailers that come out and talking about how great or not great they look. That seems like something that I definitely do, especially since there's probably going to be Godzilla and Aquaman trailers.
Should we do...
Which should just do the whole set. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, should we do next week's bonus Patreon episode be Comic-Con download? Sounds good.
Unless something crazy happens, but that's how that works for me.
Right.
You can find my work at polygon.com. This week I was part of their Dark Knight Turns 10, speaking about a non-CGI special effect, the truck flip from the Dark Knight, how they achieved it.
How they did the hydraulic thing underneath.
It's a TNT piston, but they also did it on a bank street that had
spoilers?
Underground vaults.
Wait, spoilers for this article that I want to read on polygon.com. Thanks, Dave.
It is full of quotes of people who are actually there and did it. So you're just getting secondhand information from me on the podcast. Get the firsthand information over at polygon.com. And until next week, stay vertical. Don't fall down.